Good evening, James McKenney here with My Science Hour. It is October 2nd, 2014. Wow, this year is just flying by. Many, many topics to cover tonight. I'm going to start out with a little dissertation on plants. Now, I talked to a botanist about a week and a half ago. And it was very interesting because we were looking at very delicate plants that survive on the edge of, kind of the edge of reality. Some air plants, some that eat bugs, some that live on the coldest areas of the planet. And he made a comment off the cuff as a botanist, as a scientist. He said, plants and animals in the world they live on the very edge of existence. They only have enough, and there's only enough available for them to survive. There's simply no more available. And I made the comment to him. I said, well, that means that taxation actually kills the human species. And he looked at me. And the contradiction, you could see the shock waves going through this guy's brain as he realized that I was right and that I was using his own discovered, the things he discovered about plants and animals in his lifelong study. He was an elderly guy. And you could see the shock waves going through his head, and he looked at me and he had no way to respond. And that's the situation. Once I used an example on my show about taxation. Let's tax the geese. When they're flying south, now they have the baby geese that are the first year flying south. They just have enough strength to get there. They've been learning and training all summer to fly. And now they're in the fall, they're learning to stay in formation. And they just have enough as a collective group to get to their destination. So they have food, etc. But what if you put a 20 or a 30% tax on those geese and said 20 or 30% of your energy, of the food you eat, of everything you do must be taken by this other group of, let's say the eagles tax them, and say, we won't eat you, but you got to pay us this 20 or 30% of everything you do, and then we'll store this up, and then we become wealthy because of your taxation of the geese. And what the guy was saying, the botanist was saying, in essence, is that there isn't a 20 or 30% to be had. There's simply not enough available. And that is the case with the human species. And that is why when this once great country was formed, they did something. There was taxation without representation. And so they started a country in which it was illegal to tax the individual, because once a government starts to do that, it becomes tyrannical. Now, let's look at these states, the individual states. There are, of the 50 states, about 45 of them are broke and or on the edge. The states that are succeeding are the states with no taxation. The states that are failing are the states with taxation of personal income, housing, etc. And so what are the people doing? They're leaving these states to go to the other states simply because it's a matter of existence. They cannot exist in the states. And now, especially when you hit the baby boomers, I found it interesting in the states that have personal taxation, they're becoming very aggressive on collecting the individual income tax. And they actually quote numbers like this. They've spent $10 million in enforcement, and they received $40 million back. So they count that as a benefit, that they are making four times the amount of money invested. But wait a minute. They don't count the number of people that have left and that will never come back and never, ever pay a penny in that state again. And have gone to other states where they can live and prosper. And now the baby boomers, one thing you have to understand, the vast majority of them are going to start businesses. Once they retire, they get, you know, they're going to do something creative because they have health, they have their health, they have some money, disposable income. So they're not going to go to a state, and they're, once they leave those states, so the return on investment is hugely negative, but they don't measure that. But at any rate, the point here is that the many of these states are becoming very draconian in their collection efforts, let's put it that way. People are fleeing the United States in droves. The July 1st mandate that all Americans report their foreign bank accounts as available for tax liens, and then the United States, or the IRS, I should say, which is not the United States, it's a collection arm of the foreign bank. It's really not any, doesn't have anything to do with the federal government. Has the ability to go into foreign countries and demand money out of bank accounts. So what the foreign countries did, once again, this whiplash effect, which nobody measures, is to shut down all American bank accounts. So if you cannot have a bank account in a foreign country because these banks simply, they fear the fact that somebody's going to come in and demand a large sum of money. And remember that banks don't, by the world banking standards, they don't keep money. It's not like they have a big vault in the basement with the money. They loan that money out. So to get money and pay it back is not productive for a bank. So they don't want to have anything to do with that, so they simply shut out Americans. So the American private investor in foreign countries has been just liquidated in the last year. And that was started prepping leading up to the July 1st, 2014 date. So this is just a little bit. Now, you have to understand the people that are in charge of collecting and stuff like that don't understand that what they're doing is counterproductive. The way you create a productive society is to allow it to run freely. They understood, and they actually paid off, not a lot of people don't understand this, during the Clinton administration, they had nearly paid off the national debt and brought it down to zero. Because they realized that this was dependent on the velocity of money. As money moved, it made more money for the federal government. And during the Bush administration and then successive through the Obama administration, they believed that collecting taxes is the way to in increasing the load and making it forcing people to not spend their money by increasing the taxation on the investment of money. The end result is that people get their money and then they sit on it. They don't do anything with it. So the velocity of money now is zero. Also the immigration problem where all of the jobs have gone overseas, the velocity of money is zero. So we're living in a stagnant society economy that is going no place. The car dealers are sitting there with car lots full of cars. The realtors are sitting there with just vast numbers of houses that they can't sell. In Florida, I saw an article where a judge was processing, a single judge was processing 800 foreclosures a day in Florida. That's just remarkable because the country is has failed financially. So get ready after the Christmas season here, which surely is going to be one of the lowest on record, even though they always say, oh, it's 2% better than last year. That's baloney. The economy is just going to crash and burn worse than ever before. So at any rate, the end result here is that the people in charge don't know what they're doing, and they don't know how to fix it. There are some states, for example, some of the more golden states that you would think would be succeeding because of retirees, California, Hawaii, states like that are failing miserably because of the huge amount. Hawaii has something like 65% taxation. once you get done with all of the various forms of taxation. And so the people are just fleeing because or living on a very minimal income, something like that. But it's not the booming state that it could be. California, the people are fleeing en masse because it's just being taxed out of existence. And where are they going to? They're going to states that are not taxing the individual. So anyway, that's a little discussion. But I thought it was interesting. This what jogged my interest in talking about this to the public is the botanist's, biologist's statement that in nature there is not enough excess for there's simply not enough excess. The people and so what happens? We live in a society, in an economy that is supposed to be the best, supposedly, the Western world, Western model, but it's based on the unbridled use of resources. But the world has run out of resources. The military, the U.S. military, uses 70% of the world resources. It's absolutely insane. So, at any rate, that's a form of result of taxation in which supposedly all of the terror, etc., they're protecting us, but really what they've done is create the terrorism in the world. It's a reaction to U.S. policy, and it's inevitable. So at any rate, I don't want to waste more time on this show, but what is important, how do you fix this? Well, you can't. It's a runaway train that is already gone off the trestle that has no second side. It's the train is plummeting into the abyss, and so the only thing you can do is minimalize your life and just stay out of sight is the best thing you can do. And this goes for rich people. I know doctors, attorneys, people who are wealthy who have either left or are planning on leaving. And it's just like some of them are still there biding their time to get some benefit or whatever. But people are just bailing, and there's no other way. But this, remember, that's a way to drive this country. Everything that's going on is a way to drive this country, the old United States, into third world status. It's already there. with that in mind, too, I wanted to read an email here from a listener. This is from a listener, Joe. He says, I have children in the horrible international education system called Common Core. He said, a commoner's education indeed, which state governors and education boards adopt and therefore get installed in 40-some-odd states already in the United States. This comes from the World Banking entity known as the United Nations, specifically out of their education division known as UNESCO. They do not teach by design. They indoctrinate. And then he goes on, he talks a little bit more, and then he goes, get them, they want to get them, that is the children, when they are young and they feel they will have them for life. This is where your powerful work comes in. He's talking to me here. He's mentioning that my work is powerful. He says, thanks to you, my children ask questions. They listen to what the teachers teach, but they know that has nothing to do with how to find the answers. Okay, so anyway, just a comment, and I know a lot of kids, families listen to this show, but understand the kids more than anybody today have to grow up very quickly. Because you live in a world of deception, lies, where politicians speak with forked tongues. They tell you one thing when really they're covering for something else, some other program in the back. They always are telling you how good they're doing for you when it's a total lie. What they're doing is ripping you off, and this will continue far into the next generation. So, yeah, kids wake up. and unfortunately, the vast majority of parents are living in la-la land out there and have no clue of what's going on. The 22-year solar cycle, is a cycle of the sun in the weather systems on Earth, the somewhat you might call them climate changes, follow this pattern. So I want to make note that, remember the 1991 Halloween blizzard in which it snowed for like 3 feet in the Midwest, and then after that, about a day later, it snowed another 3 feet, completely shut down all of the northern states. It was one of the three hurricanes, actually Himmacane, as I playfully call it in my weather book, the Himmacane that came across the northern plains and the northern Midwestern states, eventually ended up in the North Atlantic, combined with two other hurricanes. I've talked about this many times on previous shows, to create what was called the perfect storm. Three hurricanes meeting in the North Atlantic to create, in the movie, The Perfect Storm was made after that. There was a book written about it. And I met one time a person whose father was the owner of the boat, which was the movie was centered around this boat that ended up in the perfect storm out in the Atlantic and was lost, of course, with 100-foot waves. I mean, how do you manage any boat with 100-foot waves? But at any rate, the point here is that right now, in the year 2014, we are approximately at the end of the 22-year cycle of the Halloween blizzard. It really would have been last year, and last year was a doozy of a winter, if you remember. It was a horrible, horrible winter. And by the way, at the beginning of the winter, the propane and natural gas prices went through the roof. Remember, they couldn't get propane to dry the corn in the corn harvest. And so that drove up the propane prices, drove down the availability, and people were paying $5 a gallon for propane in the middle of the winter when they were desperate to keep their houses heated. This is, you know, talk about contrived economics. And so strange, because now North Dakota has vast amounts of natural gas that are being produced. What's happening to that natural gas? Why wasn't it available for the corn harvest? Why wasn't it available at a reasonable price for homeowners? You can see that the energy world is very bizarre, and the politicians are doing nothing, absolutely nothing, to better this. But for you out there, just be advised that we might be in for a early, long, severe winter. And there's no way to predict the weather. But if I were you, I would get my ducks in a row or find the first plane south. One of the two. Ebola in the United States, the first case reported in Houston. And this guy flew in from an Ebola-infested country. Nobody asked a question. Nobody quarantined these people. Into a hospital. Goes into a hospital. I'm sick. Talks to everybody. You know, it's spreading it far and wide. This is a direct result of the World Health Organization lack of policy. In other words, everything the World Health Organization and the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, which is the U.S. Contingency of supposed protection for diseases in the United States, are complete failures. In fact, their policies promote, in fact, they guarantee 100% that Ebola will come into the United States and spread. So I've talked about this before. I'm not going to waste any more time, but the first case in the United States with humans, they had reported it with dogs before in three states. How did dogs get Ebola other than somebody gives it to them? But this is all being promoted. And like ISIS in the Mideast, this group of CIA-trained and supported militants that are supposedly marching through the Mideast right now, Ebola is being promoted. It was generated laboratory Ebola given in Africa, and obviously the way it started was not in the rural areas of Africa the way these type of viruses typically start. It was started in the cities where it was guaranteed to spread very quickly. Another update, many schools in the United States are staying open in spite of the fact that there's 40 to 50% absentee rate of the students. They are testing them. There, a large percentage of these students are in hospital, but apparently the schools are staying open so they don't lose school days, they don't lose funding. But the end result is that there's a national epidemic, and it appears what they are getting is EV, enterovirus D68, it's called. Enterovirus, or EV D68. But what's bizarre is that the tests that should test for this in humans is not working. So they're saying, well, these, they don't know what they have. So it looks like there's a variation of this going around. And if they don't know how to identify it, clearly they don't know how to treat it because they don't know what it is. But there's an epidemic of vast proportions in the United States amongst high school kids, grade school kids in general, and nobody is talking about this. Let's see. Also, going along with the same theme, the promotion to get flu shots is at epidemic proportions right now. And I am not a doctor. My personal recommendation, which I simply because is that don't go anywhere near a flu shot. Everybody I know who's gotten a flu shot has gotten very sick from it, and they won't take another one. The flu shot is designed on old strains of flu, and it has nothing to do with the new strains of flu that are coming around this year. Well, they say, oh, but it may increase your ability. They claim that in prior years it had an 80 to 90% effectiveness. Now it's a 40 to 60% effectiveness, which means you're better off not taking it. You're better off just taking your chances. There's all of these articles coming out that are trying to convince the public that it's a good thing. Boy, they want you to get those shots. They just are dying to give you a shot. Then the ISIS, now they're claiming, is in the United States. Boy, I bet they've got a big rowboat over there in the Mideast to get them over here to the U.S., obviously being brought here by and entertained by the U.S. government. The foreign immigration policies of the United States simply don't exist anymore. So people are free to come here as they want, but as I said before, these are obviously CIA trained to cause disruption in the Mideast so that Obama can get up on his little soapbox and say, hey, we need a new regime over here in Syria and all of the other countries in the Mideast. That's what they're after. That's the whole purpose of ISIS. And once they're done with them, then, hey, bring a few to the United States to cause some chaos here. That'll keep the protection agency in power in Washington. The Aral Sea in Russia is drying up. Now, this is the fourth largest freshwater body in the world. A number of decades ago in Russia, they began diverting a couple of rivers that fed into this body of water. They did this to promote agriculture in a nearby region. And this sounds like one of the old 1950s Russia socialist mega programs. And so anyway, they promoted agriculture in a nearby area with the water from the river. But the problem is the Aral Sea began to dry up. The chemical runoff from the agricultural area polluted and stagnated the water that was left, which created a chemical dust that blew onto the agricultural land and ruined the agricultural land. So now they don't have any agriculture there, very minimal, and they have a sea that has dried up. Some of the progress of modern man. And just a little comment, whenever you have large numbers of people or plants, let's put it that way, they tend to overgrow their population and then it makes it adaptable for any type of virus or something to come in, or fungus or other species that would attack the dominant species. And once it begins, then there's just a free-for-all because that's the only thing there. The thing that keeps plants isolated in nature is simply that, isolation. And you see this repeatedly, like with the ash borer and the bug that's the moth that's killing the birch trees throughout the eastern part of the country. When these are introduced, they kill off the majority, but there's little pockets where they're isolated, where they exist. Now, remember during the bubonic plague in Europe, which was brought in by the Asians as they invaded Europe, the people who survived that isolated themselves. And that's an interesting point now that Ebola is in the United States, for people to isolate themselves from the rest of society and wait it out, because the World Health Organization and CDC programs are guaranteeing that this is going to spread throughout society. And so isolating yourself, unfortunately, in a time when the world should be progressing at a tremendous rate, going into outer space with millions of people, you have the NASA, the space agency, which is maintaining control, feeding out ridiculous, outdated science and maintaining it. This is the world we live in, so there's really not a lot to be gained by maintaining a connection with what is known as the real world. Just a quick comment to those who have responded to the WING projects. I'm working in with some people right now. I'm working in the background also, so please be patient. I've been extremely busy lately. There's a lot of things going on in the background. And so I'm going to have responses to the people who have been requesting information, licensing, etc. So just please be patient. It's a tremendous time of progress. And once again, this will be handled by people behind the scenes. And hopefully within 10 years, we'll be shutting down nuclear power plants, coal plants, and replacing it with the type of energy that we should have had ages ago. But once again, a tremendously positive response to my WING generation project and the World Energy Project. It's just, it's something that's going to happen, and I'm very happy with the release. If you don't have a copy of your book, it's available on my webpage called McCanny Wing Generator. It's had to be released that way so that it prevented large corporations from putting patents on this and then burying it. So it was a public release to make sure this information is going to be used for the benefit of the public. There's been an article circulating recently stating that the water on Earth is older than the solar system, that it was part of the original, supposedly alleged, cloud that formed the planets, which is a bunch of fairy tale science. But once again, you see a vast contradiction in this. The people that are making this theory, this fairy tale science theory up, don't understand that when supposedly the planets formed by this big coagulating cloud of dust, that the heat of formation was so high that you could not have water on a planet. It would have evaporated off in a flash. And so the water, by that theory, would have had to come later. But that's what they can't figure out, is where did the water on Earth come from? And, in fact, where did any of the atmospheres of any of the planets come from, no matter what the composition, because the initial formation should have been way too hot for volatiles to coagulate or to assemble around the gravitational body, because they were just simply too hot. It would have boiled off into space in a flash. So all of the atmospheres, all of the water on Earth, everything in the planetary atmospheres of all the planets would have had to come at a secondary stage, and this is what they can't answer. Why, in fact, Mars clearly had water and oceans, and it's all gone. So they're going, NASA's going, oh, well, it was billions of years ago. And but why, if it was billions of years ago, then all the geological activity since then would have destroyed any of the features, like delicate little rivers that meander through the Martian landscape, or waters, or washes, or erosion, or all of the effects of water, which are pristine on the surface of Mars. Mars has tremendous dust storms every year, and they would have quickly destroyed all this, so the features, the water erosion features that we see on Mars are recent, within the last couple thousand years at most. The ancients tell us that they saw a large comet come by Mars and basically suck off its atmosphere. Mars was a blue planet prior to that. And but modern science, oops, billions of years ago, Mars had water. We got to find out why, sending, you know, with space scientists sitting in their little offices, collecting their little paycheck and getting their little retirement, all of them happy and saying the same ridiculous thing, trying to pawn it off on the public. But the end result is that this idea that the water is older than the solar system, or the water on Earth, is absurd, because the water could not have passed through that initial formation stage. The real result is that all of the planets came secondary. Jupiter and the Sun were the first members of our solar system, a twin star. The atmosphere of Jupiter is identical to that of the Sun. It's just smaller and not lit. But composition-wise, Jupiter and the Sun have identical atmospheric compositions. They were the first original members. All the other planets came later, being adopted by capture. And they came in as large comets. And not all comets are large, of course, but these ones were large. They worked themselves into the solar system and worked themselves into stable orbits. Now, this is all explained in my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, how this process works. The circularization of the orbits is done by the tail drag of the comets. And we saw this happening, for example, with Hale-Bopp, a recent new planetary member of our solar system, which is still in the elliptical comet orbit stage. Dragging in that tail material is the effect that is needed, and we saw this with Hale-Bopp, where it reduced its orbit from 4,250 years down to about 2,600 years. The next time it comes in, it'll reduce again from 2,600 down to 1,300 years. The next time it'll be from 1,300 to 600 years, and at that point it'll be a permanent member of our solar system, eventually working into a permanent orbit. Down to the, and it might be our first polar planet, unless it has an interaction with Earth on the next encounter. So, either throwing Earth out of its orbit, or who knows, but that will be in another 2,600 years. Not many of us will be around to see that, but it should be noted. Here's an article. This came from a listener. This is many different sneaky ways that food companies put monosodium glutamate in the food. So I'm going to quick read this list. If you see any of these on a package, that means it contains monosodium glutamate. And remember that a lot of organic, so-called organic foods include monosodium glutamate, which is basically a poison. It's used for flavor enhancement, and food companies believe to be competitive, they have to put it in their food. But it's tremendously bad. Back in the 50s, when the Chinese restaurants first started to become popular, people were getting what they called Chinese food sickness, or Chinese restaurant sickness. It was a result of monosodium glutamate in the food. It activates the taste buds. It causes things to taste good, but it's terrible for your body. So anyway, here's a list. I'm going to read this quickly. So these are all the variations that in the list of food. And in fact, unless it's pure monosodium glutamate, the FDA does not require food manufacturers to even list it. So it might be in your food and not even listed. But here are the names that it could be listed under unpackaged food, processed food. And guaranteed, if there's any processed food, it probably has MSG in it. Okay, here's the list. I'll read it quickly. Glutamic acid, glutamate, monosodium glutamate, E621, E620, E622 is what's used in England. Calcium glutamate, monoammonium glutamate, magnesium glutamate, natrium glutamate, yeast extract. How many times do you see yeast extract in food? It's monosodium glutamate. Anything that says hydrolyzed. Anything that says hydrolyzed protein. Calcium caseinate. Sodium caseinate. Yeast food. Yeast nutrient. Autolyzed yeast gelatin. Textured protein. Soy protein isolate. Vetsin, anything that says protein. Okay, so there's other, just let me just look here a sec. Okay, now here are some things that are similar. It says glutamic acid, which is another name for MSG. So here's a list of similar products. Okay, here it goes. Bouillon or broth. All of those little cubes of bouillon or a jar of it, stay away from that stuff. It's pure monosodium glutamate. Carrageenan, G-E-E-N-A-N, E-407. Broth or stock. Okay, any flavorings. Maltodextrin, citric acid, citrate, E-330. Anything ultra-pasteurized. Now, in the modern world, many things now are being ultra-pasteurized. So just stay away from anything ultra-pasteurized. Barley malt, pectin, protease, anything enzyme-modified, anything containing enzymes, malt extract, soy sauce extract, protein-fortified, or simply seasonings. Wow. And you see that all the time on packages, monosodium glutamate. It's in everything. So the end result, buy organic, fresh food, not processed, and from farmers directly, if you can, who you trust that are growing organic food. And also, many of the organic farmers are still using GMO seed. It is almost impossible to find real food in the world today. It's just been absolutely infiltrated. You go into a grocery store, you look at rows and lines and rows and rows and rows of packaged food. Not a bit of it worth eating. It actually doesn't have any food value. It's actually harmful. Just a quick note, a personal report here. A person was in Denver Airport this past week, and the whole airport was shut down. A tornado sat over the Denver airport for over 3 hours. Now, this is not normal Denver weather to have tornadoes, let alone have one sit over the airport for 3 hours. They said it was raining so hard that the whole airport was shut down. The ground crews, the airplanes, nothing could move. It was raining so hard outside you could not see 2 feet out the window. So at any rate, obviously some manipulated weather, and what an interesting place. This is at the Denver Airport, which is a surface camp or entrance for a New World Order installation that's below it. So anyway, whatever's going on there, pretty weird stuff, but that's a report of a person who actually lived through that incident. Okay, I've got three main science topics I'm going to be covering tonight. I'll be talking a little bit more about the Wing Generator Project. I will be talking about the sighting spring comet approaching Mars here in a couple of days, and then also the Rosetta mission to Mars, to a comet. They're going to land on the comet November 11th. basically a lot of misinformation coming out of the standard scientific community regarding that. Okay, so the predictions that are coming out of the standard scientific community for a comet sighting spring, and by the way, it's October 19th, it will occur in the middle of the day. This Earth will be basically around noontime, middle of the day, for us Earthlings here. And so there's no amateur viewing of this event, which is unfortunate, because the comet will have a coma of around 19,000 miles, certainly observable by amateurs, and possibly some effects. But there again, now NASA has three instruments there. It has the Mars Orbiter, which had been there for a long time, and then the MAVEN mission, they just arrived, they got those out there in 10 months. You got to know that they're interested in seeing this. The public announcement, which is what I call the mushroom announcement, you know, they keep us in the dark and feed us, you know what, is that the sighting spring will have no effect on, they say it may cause a little bit of drag on the satellites that are up there and cause them to drop into slightly lower orbits, but that effect will only last for a few minutes. But basically they're saying nothing's going to happen. Here is what reality will show, that there will be electrical interactions. Clearly at that distance, there will be electrical interactions with the planet Mars between the comet, because it's so close. There will be electrical interactions, possibly direct electrical discharges between the comet and Mars, because Mars is at a totally different electrical potential than the comet nucleus. Coma is only 19,000 miles across. That's the gas and dust cloud. And so its closest approach to Mars is 82,000 miles. So the tail really is not going to, it looks like Mars will not fall into the tail area. But there's another aspect to a comet is called the hydrogen cloud. It's an ionized hydrogen cloud, an H-plus cloud, that sits around the comet nucleus that probably extends out for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of miles. That's the Debye shielding. Debye shielding means that's the ionized shielding of the electrical charge of the comet nucleus. And so within that shielding, the comet will have the ability to discharge directly to the planet Mars. Mars being heavier, it will have the ability to draw off material from the tail of the comet, because the Mars will begin to adapt the electrical potential of the comet. And so it's a very interesting interaction, in that when Venus, the comet, came by Mars thousands of years ago and relieved Mars of its atmosphere, Venus was larger, and that interaction took a bit of time. It didn't happen very quickly, because at that point Venus was in a very much more circular orbit, whereas sighting spring is coming in on an elliptical orbit very fast, 56 kilometers per second, they say. But so it's going to pass Mars in a matter of like a half hour, whereas the Venus event probably took days before it inched by Mars, had plenty of time to draw off the atmosphere of Mars and therefore the oceans, because there was no atmosphere to hold it in place. And where did that go? Well, that went into the comet Venus that was passing by, the protoplanet Venus in its comet form. And so that was a very different interaction, because Venus, the comet, was big, the nucleus was big, bigger than Mars itself. And so it relieved Mars of its atmosphere and oceans. Sighting spring is a little teeny comet. It's not going to have that kind of effect, but easily Mars could pull some of the tail material off. And this is what I doubt if we're going to see real accurate reporting from NASA. In the NASA JPL webpage regarding comet sighting spring, they have artist animations of this. They have a couple pictures of the comet from the Hubble Space Telescope, but they have an animation of the comet nucleus approaching Mars, and they show it as a white, pure white snowball. Well, of all of the comets that have been visited by spacecraft, including the Rosetta mission to the comet they're circling, they're orbiting right now, it's the blackest object in the solar system. It's basically baked on carbonaceous material, baked onto the nucleus by the electron beam in the cometary discharge. And so the nucleus of comets are pure black, yet in the NASA and the NASA artist conceptual drawing on their web page, they show it as pearly white. Now, you know, pure lie, absolute pure garbage lie. And so NASA is going to have a public announcement with 50 apparently reporters or whatever on the 13th of October. Before, why wouldn't they have it during the passage? Why wouldn't they have it a day later where they would show all the data? But they're having it on the 13th before the passage of Siding Spring. So then they can doctor, they can report whatever they want. But there's no planned, scheduled news reporting of NASA afterwards or during. Isn't that interesting? Just these people just can't have a conscience. I guess when you get a paycheck, that's as good as it gets. So anyway, we'll wait and see what kind of reporting comes out of the Siding Spring encounter with Mars this coming October 19th, but don't expect much. At any rate, the next topic, Rosetta mission at, there's a comet that the Rosetta mission from the European Space Agency. They are now circling the comet nucleus at a distance of 30 kilometers. So that's like nose to nose. There's no atmosphere there to block their vision, so they have very good photos. And I kind of got a kick out of it. They showed a picture of the landing site, and then you look at the picture that's on their webpage, and it's this fuzzy, out-of-focus picture. You can't really see anything. But and it's rather comical, too. A listener pointed this out, that they have photoshopped snow on the nucleus of the comet. And I looked at that, and I said, I can't believe it, because you look at earlier photos of the comet nucleus that they released, in that region does not show any snow at all. So they photoshopped, it looks like a snowbank in springtime that's melting, you know. But there's no vapor coming off the alleged snowbank that they have photoshopped onto the comet nucleus. Yeah, it just doesn't get any sillier than this. But a very little, just meager, absolutely meager reporting. They did report that the nucleus was hotter than normal and it's pure black. So when they land on this, now the idea is that the lander of the Rosetta mission is going to probe down into the nucleus. They claim giving them insight into the formation of the solar system and comets, etc. But what they're going to find is more rock, not dust at all. Last week I talked about a supposedly a gravity-defying asteroid that's spinning very fast. That's the, I think it's D60 was the designation. But it's spinning extremely fast, and a dusty conglomeration would not hold together under the centrifugal forces. So they're claiming van der Waals forces, which are very weak, extremely weak electrical forces due to ionized gases. But there again, it's absurd because this thing is spinning. I did some calculations on that. Even van der Waals forces would not hold it together because here's the problem. Van der Waals forces are very short-ranged, and so they only span like one or two molecules of distance in the structure. So it's not enough to hold together, not like gravity, which spans the entire nucleus. And so they really, the van der Waals explanation doesn't hold water. But, you know, in the world of modern day peer-reviewed publication, anything will be published that supports the standard concept that this is a piece of dust, a loose conglomerate of dust, when in reality it is a hard rock. Just like the nucleus at Rosetta, just like the nucleus of Siding Spring, and just like every other nucleus and asteroid that they have visited. These are obviously the result of interplanetary cores where these pieces were blown out during a massive collision of some objects in outer space, and are the result of the great pressures that created this rocky material, and then, as I say, due to collisions, blew these planets into smithereens, and those are the chunks that are still floating around outer space. The comet Siding Spring came in, they say, from the Oort cloud, millions of miles away. But then again, the Oort cloud, they talk about it as scientific fact. There's not a shred of evidence that there's any such thing as the Oort cloud, nor can they ever measure it. Supposedly a depository of comets millions of miles out from the solar system. Absolute fairy tale science, something that cannot be proved, but they keep repeating it. So once again, the end result is nothing more than fairy tale science coming out of the standard scientific community. And yeah, kids, if you go and study hard and get your degree in school and then go for advanced degrees in astronomy, you're going to be learning pure fairy tale science. And that's going to continue far into the future. So the best thing to do, and let me give some encouragement to kids. There are private ventures out there that don't care about standard science. And that is the way of the future. Just like, let me make an example. Back in the Middle Ages, when the Venetian traders, for example, started trading with the East, they found Marco Polo found the land route. They began trading with the East for spices, etc. But they soon learned it was easier and you could carry much more than a camel train could carry over thousands and thousands of miles. It was much more efficient to go by boat. And that's where Balboa and some of the other discoverers, they found the route, they were looking for the route to the East. But at any rate, the Venetian traders found that route by boat, and they started trading with the Far East by boat, and greatly increased their profit, etc. But those were private ventures. They were also the ones that funded the clock. Before then, there were no good timepieces, and they said, hey, we need good timepieces so we can navigate. And so they sent out reward money. This was worth a lot of money, and people came up with clocks. That's where the Swiss became very adept at making spring-loaded clocks that were very accurate over long periods of time and could be adjusted so that they were extremely accurate. But this was all done by private ventures of people, and so space will be done the same way. The military, forget them. They're going to go and try and carry their hardware into three dimensions. If you want to have a good analysis of that, read my book, The Diamond Principle, where I talk about how the military going into three dimensions will fail. It simply cannot defend the universe in three dimensions. They can't defend it in two dimensions on the surface of the Earth, but try three dimensions. So the people that can go the farthest, the fastest, there won't be any U.S. military around to be found, because they're going to be trying to carry their lumberingly large, grotesque machinery into outer space. And while they're doing that, the individuals, the venture capitalists, will be gone and long gone. So the in three-dimensional outer space, the military simply can't keep up. It's just a matter of their modus operandi cannot function. And so the end result is that private venture in outer space, and that happened also in two dimensions. I talk about the Romans, how they went out and they were successful up to a point, but their empire became too big, the boundaries of their empire, they could no longer control it. And so the only thing the senators in Rome could see was the vast riches coming in from the frontiers, not realizing that the Roman armies, were being defeated one by one as they went out into these regions, into the far hinterland. They really got a little bit into England, not much. they got into Germany, but that's where they kind of ended. The Roman influence got into the Mideast, but they were driven back from there. But you see, this expansionism has its limits, especially with the vast amount of money, etc. And so the individual, this is, now kids, listen to this. Get your scientific education, learn physics and chemistry and biology at the root level. Much of that is very solid as you go through high school. Basic physics and a good, I would go to a good private college where you're going to get a good solid education with professors that care. And get that good solid education, but beware of all of the other garbage that they throw in there in the meantime. The space science, much of which is fairy tale science, you have to learn and differentiate between what is real, the physics that you're going to get in the textbook, teaching you physics and mechanics and electricity and magnetism, etc. Differentiate that solid good material from the bizarre outer space fairy tale science that's produced by NASA. And then as you grow up, start to hook up with companies that are private and go in there. There's some super private organizations that are just doing super work today, and get hooked up with them, and, you know, the sky's the limit. But don't bother getting hooked up with any government agencies. They're lumbering in the cave ages, and they're going to continue to lumber in the cave ages, wasting vast amounts of money and resources. Remember that once you get into outer space, you don't need the Hubble Space Telescope. A smaller telescope will be very ample in outer space. You know, a 32-inch, easily funded private telescope in outer space would be fantastic. You could see all kinds of things, and, you know, also, again, there in the Diamond Principle, I talk about how to develop outer space. That and so that's a very important book for kids to read, the Diamond Principle, and all my other books. Okay, well, I'm running out of time here, so I got to get back to a few topics. The Wing Generator Project is ongoing. People who are interested in licensing and continuing to develop, that's good. Remember, this is for people who have experience. This is also very dangerous stuff. Wind and electricity can be very dangerous, so people that are not experienced, you know, it's not something like learning on the job. It's something you have to have experience. Remember that I still have items on my sales page that the water filter products, there's still quite a few items, the bulk filters, the stainless steel water filtration products, the larger plastic water filtration products, still on sale, 10% sale. And remember, you get my new ebook free with a purchase of over $400, or you get the other two books, RSA, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, and the water book. You get those free with any water filter project purchase on my webpage, jmccsci.com. And I'm, once again, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. I'm out of town. Time. We'll talk to you next week. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.